Well, hey there. Welcome to The Real Podcast. We share the stories and insights of real people that challenge your mind and inspire you to grow. For more information and resources, check out our website at CochraneAlliance.com/real. So, let's get real.
All right, here we go. Excited to have you with us for episode 4 of The Real Podcast. Today we're going to talk about an issue that I feel as a male, I feel not qualified. My gender doesn't delve into this subject probably as much as we should, partly because our experience of giving birth, of the struggles of reproduction, it's quite different than those of the fair sex.
You have a limited sphere.
So I'm happy to welcome into the Real studio here Jill Kochuk, who is a new friend of mine. Jill, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Jill, I don't even know. I guess we were somehow talking, and you let me know that issues pertaining to, well, you actually, was more of an out of the blue email that you just sent to me and said, hey, there's a bunch of stuff going on in my life and I'd like to talk about it.
Pretty much. That's usually how it ends up with me.
So we had a conversation face to face, just hearing a little bit of your story and journey of seeing where God would take you and your husband in terms of a family. And in your case, there was a lot of speed bumps on that. And I've gotten to know you in the short time that we've been friends as a person who's passionate about this, but given a good chunk of their lives to thinking about this, living it, and now trying to love other people who are going through infertility, who've experienced miscarriage, gone through the crazy ups and downs that come about by trying to start a family.
There's a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah.
It doesn't always go as planned.
So, Jill, again, I want to just disclose that I hope I can navigate these issues as a man in a way that is respectful and honest and doesn't make any of our listeners upset with me. So be patient with me as we navigate this.
It's all good. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, before we get into it, just tell us a little bit about who you are. Who is Jill Kochuk?
Oh, there's a question. I'm 37. I just turned 37 at the end of April. I am a mama to one very, very spicy 8-year-old. Her name is Bria, and she's the light of our world. She's awesome. I homeschool her, and that can be super fun. It can be super interesting too sometimes, but we love homeschooling. We love being outside. I am married to a marvelous man named Mark, and if you've ever seen him in the sanctuary, he is the very ginormous male. We joke that he's like a fridge with a basketball on top. So yeah, if you're ever looking for an O-line, right there.
Okay.
We've been married since 2006 and we've had a lot of speed bumps, as you said.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this will maybe take a little bit of time to unpack, but let's get into it. Tell us a little bit about your journey as it pertains to family. And I know it doesn't start with beginning a family. It starts way before that.
Way before that. Yeah. I have literally always wanted to be a mom. Always, always. When anybody would ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, it was always a marine biologist or a mom. And when I started getting older, I started making the choices that I needed to in order to be a mom. Like, my whole focus in life was to get to motherhood. We knew that I'd have trouble though. I've never had a regular period. I've always been kind of messed up autoimmunely. And it doesn't run in my family so much, like the infertility, but my mom is nicknamed Fertile Myrtle, which is hilarious. But yeah, yay. But we knew that we'd have some problem. So I actually met Mark in university. We both had failed math, of course. And so we were in summer school and I was 19 and he was 24. And I knew as soon as I saw him that, yep, dibs, he's mine.
Okay.
Which was pretty cool. And we knew that we'd have problems.
And was talking about family, was that something you did when you were dating?
Like, oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And the subject of conversations.
The subject that you knew you were going to have issues, that came up.
Yep. I told him flat off, like, I'm like, this, it could happen, it could not. Hmm. It's, if we want it to happen, we need to start trying early.
Okay.
So we were married at 24 and we started trying at 24.
Okay.
And I remember that year, 6 months after we got married, we went to my sister-in-law's wedding in Maui and we were trying. And I was like so sure that I was going to get pregnant and the hope was there and whatnot. So I smugly said no to the sushi, which is still one of my big regrets, not having
fresh sushi in Hawaii.
Fresh sushi in Maui. What was I thinking? yeah, like not partaking of Mai Tais or anything else. Just being very, very careful with my body because I was so sure, right? Like hope against hope. But it didn't happen. Mm. And it continued not to happen. And there was a lot of angst and a lot of tears involved.
And when you say it continued not to happen, how long are we talking it continued not to happen?
We tried for that whole first year of marriage, and then I saw a positive test. And it was right before our first anniversary. And I remember because we were sitting in church and Mark's like, he whispered.
You took a positive test at church?
Not at church. No, okay. No. We were earlier that morning, I had taken a test and I was going to surprise him after. I had like this whole elaborate, you know, the way that us females tell you boys that we're pregnant. Mm. And we were sitting in church and he whispered over to me. He's like, hey, did you take the test? And I'm like, yeah, I did. And he's like, well, what was it? And I said, I was just smiling from ear to ear and he like gripped my hand and he was so excited. Mm. Like we were absolutely thrilled. So it was, since it was our first anniversary, we planned on telling our parents, we were going to take them to the ranch where we got married down south in Calgary in Fish Creek. And we were going to tell them there over breakfast. And we were incredibly excited. We could picture like the screaming and yeah, both moms, like grandma central. Right. And the day before we were supposed to go, I started bleeding out. Mm. And I was just devastated, like absolutely devastated. I was only about 7 weeks at that point, but I had major great hopes and it just, yeah. So that first anniversary did not go as planned.
You can't, had everyone been invited to the event
already? Everybody had been invited to the event. We went through with the event and whatnot and I wore my waterproof mascara, so I was good, but we didn't talk about it then or anything.
You just let them know that you were pregnant, but
we didn't even let them know that we were pregnant at that point. Okay. Yeah. We told them after, it was a very, very hard week because what we have planned never goes really the same as Jesus's plans. Right. So yeah. And then it was another 2.5 years of trying
with nothing.
No positive tests. Yeah. Mm. All my friends around me were getting pregnant. Like everybody. I remember we had dear friends of ours over and they had come over for breakfast for waffles at our house and we were stoked to have them over and whatnot. And I could tell that they were a little off and she was my best friend and they had been trying for 6 weeks. Hmm. And she told us, yeah, I'm pregnant. And already at this point, I've been trying for like 2 years and I just broke. Hmm. It was just soul crushing. I'm like, dang it. Where is my positive test? Like, is this ever going to happen? Because especially because I'm not regular, I am a chronic pee test addict. Mark calls it. Like I bought my pregnancy tests in bulk. It was crazy. Yeah. Like I would take.
Can you literally get them in bulk?
You can literally get them in bulk and they are way cheaper. Although if you are searching for them, go to a dollar store because you can get them cheap there too. And they're just the same.
Advice I would never be able to pass on.
It's good advice though when you're spending like 10 bucks on a pregnancy test, right? Blah. But yeah, I was taking so many tests like all the time, like on a weekly basis or sometimes multiple times a week. And every single kind of like if your breasts are sore, this is way too much information, Jason. If like you get sore breasts or you're like craving something or you're nauseous one morning, everything automatically goes in your brain.
Am Triggers
I
that signal.
Am I pregnant? Mm. Right. And so you get hyped up for it and then you're not. Hmm. Right. And you're like, okay, next time, next time, next time. And you're not. It is a constant cycle of being so, so, so excited and then just utterly destroyed.
So I know that following Jesus is a part of your life with the constant disappointments on that. How is it affecting your relationship with God?
I was super angry at him for a very long time. Hmm. I was very, very bitter. I was an adult believer when I was 19. I had gone to Catholic school. We weren't Catholic or anything. It was just a better education. And I became an adult believer at 19. And so I knew that being a believer doesn't mean that everything goes hunky-dory, right? But I really, really felt that, like, come on, show me the goods.
Yeah.
Right? Like, which is a horrible way of thinking about it. Like, I'm not believing to get pregnant. But it was a very tough slog for us, especially being in the church, because children are a blessing from the Lord.
Yeah.
And we weren't being blessed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was devastating. And all around us, everybody's getting pregnant. And I had to keep on taking it back to Jesus. And yeah, the nights that me and him had long conversations, it was really hard. And I loved being with kids. And so I was a Sunday school teacher and I was planning, like I was in the age two, three. And then I had an older one at our previous church, and I loved being with the kids, but I couldn't do it. I had to stop.
Okay.
Because I was just too devastated. And everybody was always asking me, hey, we need help in nursery. And yet there's no way that I could have done that.
Gone and held babies.
Yeah, gone and held babies, especially like at certain times, right? Like as soon as you get the negative test, as soon as you get your period, like there's just no way. We skipped a lot of church. There was a lot of Mother's Days that I ran out crying in the sanctuary. It was pretty hard. And everybody knew because we weren't quiet about our struggles. But everybody knew, and a lot of people were awesome, but a lot of people had no clue of what to say, right? Because if you've never been in that position,
we need to come back to that. So take us, 2.5 years from the first initial positive, what was the next major marker?
We were preparing for a child-free life because we had gone to the infertility clinic here in Calgary, and we had been taking Clomid, which is a whole fun thing, let me tell you.
Lady. So this is, had you gone to a fertility clinic then somewhere in that 2.5 years?
Yeah. So I was pushing hard to get into the fertility clinic, but my doctor didn't want to send us because I was still so young.
Okay.
I was like 25 and he said, no, there's people older than you who need this more. And I'm like, but if I'm having this much trouble, wouldn't you want to get me in a little earlier?
Yeah.
But it just didn't work out. So finally, after a year of begging, we got in there, and I remember sitting in that waiting room. I was so excited, right? Like, but the weird thing about the infertility waiting room is nobody talks. Nobody looks at you. Everybody's just kind of in their like own little bubble.
Okay.
And there's pictures of bouncing babies on the wall and everything. Like it's a very awkward place.
Okay.
Because you know what everybody's there for, right? Like, and yeah, so I remember sitting there and we had our first meeting and it was just shell shock. Like we were taking notes the entire time and this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. And we just felt like they're moving so fast because their end goal is to get you pregnant as fast as possible. Mm. Right. Because there's so many other women and men who need this.
And is the starting place just getting on drugs? Is the starting place doing other things?
It's testing first.
Okay.
So we both had to go through testing. So Mark had to have his sperm tested and I had to go through an HSG, which is basically making sure that my fallopian tubes are clear.
Okay.
And then many, many ultrasounds. Me and the internal ultrasounds were real fun for a while there.
Okay.
And then just like tracking your cycle, lots of blood tests and going through the whole gamut of it. And then the first basic thing that they do is they put you on a drug called Clomid, which is to make you ovulate.
Okay.
But it can have some nasty side effects. So
such as?
Picture the worst PMS in the world and then like elevate that a little.
Okay. So you and Mark were getting along super well.
I have a distinct memory of him just being done with me, completely done. And like, he's like, I got to go. I got to leave the house. And he was going outside the house and down the walkway just to take our dog for a walk. And I remember yelling at him from the foot of my house saying, how am I supposed to get pregnant if you won't come near me? Like, it was bad. It was real bad. I think the poor guy was a little afraid. I also went through super ovulation. So my ovaries swelled up to like softball size, which is crazy painful. It's not a fun thing. But for many people, Clomid works like a dream, right? So I was on it for 3 months and then they wanted to move right into IUI and IVF. And we decided We had Which is ethical.
Maybe just for those of us who aren't immediately familiar, that means?
intrauterine insemination. So they actually inject, like wash sperm straight into your uterus and fallopian tubes.
Okay.
And then IVF is in vitro fertilization. Yes. And most people know that, where you take like the egg outside of the woman's body and mix it with the sperm in glass, and then it gets put back into the fallopian tubes.
Okay.
There's a whole lot of terminology coming.
Sorry, guys. No.
So yeah, we decided that we were not real comfortable with IUI and IVF. Like IUI we could have done, but we were also renovating a 1951 raised bungalow in Capitol Hill, and we were completely broke. And there's definitely a cost to infertility.
Okay. Like how much?
Like tens of thousands of dollars.
Okay.
It's quite expensive. So we were just exhausted by this point. I was needing a break. I was having nightmares all the time and we just needed a break. And so you have a year on hiatus with the fertility clinic and then you have to get back. Either you have to go visit them again or you get bumped off the list. Mm. And so it was.
And you stopped the Clomid as well?
We stopped the Clomid as well. Yeah. I think we did one cycle of 3 months. Yeah. We did one cycle of 3 months because I went through super ovulation. So they said no more. And then it was a pretty mellow, we kind of made our peace with it, where I'm like, okay, well, I should say I made my peace with it. Cause my husband has always been very peaceful about it. Mm. He's always kind of been kind of chill, but I was the one like revving. And it was a pretty quiet winter and a quiet spring. And then it was the night before Mark's birthday and I had a dream. And I dreamt that I said Happy Father's Day to him instead of Happy Birthday. And we had not been trying. We had not done anything. Well, obviously we've done some. But there was no like interventions or anything. But I took a pregnancy test that morning and it was positive.
Wow. So what was the stuff that went through your mind that morning then?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I was. And Mark, he laughs still because I brought the test to him. I had a whole plan of, oh, I'm going to tell him in such a sweet way. Yeah, no. No, totally didn't happen. He was on the couch watching a movie and I brought the test in like sobbing to him. And I'm like, look, there's a line. And I will never forget. The first thing out of his mouth was, I don't see a line. And I'm like, oh, dude, there is a line. So I made an emergency call into my doctor and the receptionist, she had me in like, she's like, okay, all right, we got some time like right now, come right now. And so I went and peed in the cup and they did a test. And I remember walking out of there to a standing ovation.
Wow.
From everybody in the doctor's office. I was skipping out. I was so happy.
Wow. That's pretty cool that they knew you that well and loved you that much.
Oh, it was pretty awesome. Yeah. Huh. It helps living 5 minutes away from them too, which was good.
I see.
But yeah, so we just prayed. We prayed and prayed and
did the worry about a repeat of the miscarriage.
Oh, terrifying. Okay. Yeah. The whole way. It was just absolute fear. And it wasn't a great, easy pregnancy either. I was with my doctor for the first little bit, and we were doing like constant HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin tests and whatnot, like the pregnancy test hormone, to see how my numbers were. And I was very medicalized, and I'd always wanted to be with midwives. And so I didn't get on right away. And thinking back now, I got on when I was about 12 weeks back into midwifery. And the only reason that I did was because somebody else miscarried. Who was already on the list.
Okay.
Right. And so it's kind of bittersweet. But my pregnancy it was rough. Mm. I had some episodes of bleeding, which really panicked me. Mm. I remember I was a lifeguard for the city of Calgary I've been a lifeguard for years with them. And I remember I was started bleeding out on deck, like having some blood issues and whatnot, and just panicking. Absolutely panicking. Mm. And so I had to go to the midwives, get checked out. Everything was okay. But yeah, I had to be very, very careful with what we did.
Okay. But you,
I have a girly.
You have a girl. So what was that? What was her birth like, and having her in your arms and seeing you had a healthy person?
It was surreal. Hmm. It was absolutely surreal because my mom had had a stillbirth with her first baby.
Okay.
And I didn't even know about that until I was like 13, 14. And it was just mentioned in passing because back then nobody talks about it. Right. But my mom was very concerned the whole time. We even had an ectopic scare with Bria. And I remember her being on the phone with someone just like saying, I can't believe that this could be ectopic after all they've been through. And thankfully it wasn't. But yeah, we were monitored pretty carefully. And then at 35 weeks, my blood pressure spiked. Mm. And so we're like, okay, we got a problem. So we did everything possible to like just calm my blood pressure down. And it wasn't very calm, put it that way. So we had to be induced at 38 weeks.
Okay.
And we went to Foothills Hospital and our midwives met us there. They actually hid me in the closet for the first hour because an OB that they didn't like was on. And so it worked well. And then they just ruptured my membrane, sent us for a walk, and everything was great. Labor actually was fantastic. It was really, really good.
So actually giving birth was one of the best parts of the whole thing.
It was awesome.
Maybe I say that too lightly, I'm sure.
Well, okay, so I had compounded contractions. So instead of having one contraction and then a break, I would have like five or six together. Oh. And then I would get it like a good break. So that was interesting. Mm. But yeah, we labored through the night. We were watching kids' movies the whole time, like trying to mellow out. And so we were watching like all sorts of Disney movies. It was hilarious. So that's probably why she has her love of... the mammoths and whatnot. I can't remember what it's called.
The mammoth.
That one movie with the
like cartoons. Ice Age.
Ice Age. There we go. We watched all the Ice Ages, so she loves it. But yeah, I remember at 7:30 that morning, I was sleeping. I had gotten a really good like 40-minute sleep in between at transition, and I remember Mark just saying, "She grunted. She grunted. She's gonna push." And he was so panicked. It was hilarious. That's the one thing he remembered from birth class, was that when your wife starts grunting, she's going to want to push. And so I was still asleep, and I was grunting in my sleep. but I just remember the sun coming in and pushing and knowing that it's almost here. It's almost here. It's almost here. And then she came out, and we were so thrilled that nobody checked to see if it was a boy or a girl. And so I asked everybody, I'm like, did anyone see what it was? And nobody had a clue. So I had to like lift up the leg and take a peek in there. And I was absolutely thrilled because I said, if I only get one, I hope it's a girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'm not gonna lie, she was a rough baby. She didn't want to feed. She didn't sleep. She didn't sleep through the night until she was 4.5 years old. She was super fun, but it was amazing. She was here. And I remember my mom coming in and I was just sobbing, holding her in my rocking chair one day. And my mom, everybody was watching me very closely for postpartum depression. And she's like, oh my gosh, are you okay? What's going on? And I'm like, I'm just so happy to be that she's here. And yeah, I took a crazy amount of pictures. I have a ridiculous amount on my hard drives and whatnot. But I don't want to miss one second with her. It's been amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for some people, then that is it's the fairy tale ending, right? Okay. You've got your little girl. You've got the answer to your prayer request. You're good to go, but that's not necessarily how it went from there.
No, not even close. And that is truly a fallacy. Like everybody thinks, okay, your prayers have been answered. Everything's happy. Everything's going to go great from here on in. No, not even slightly. We started trying again, like just very casually, like not plotting my temperature or anything, but just very casually trying when she was about a year old. And from age 1 to age 4, we had another 4 miscarriages.
Okay.
With her. Yeah, it was devastating. It was absolutely devastating. Like I felt like, come on, body, you did it once. Surely you can do this again. And it was the most stressful thing I've ever gone through. It was devastating. We would get pregnant, we'd be so excited, and then we'd lose it.
Mm.
And it was just a complete cycle the entire time. And then our last miscarriage threw us even more for a loop. We had our last miscarriage on October 16th of 2015. And every time I have a miscarriage, usually about a month or 6 weeks after, my body starts doing weird autoimmune things.
Okay.
And a month after, I started fainting, and I haven't stopped.
I see.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, let's come back to that, but maybe talk to me about your marriage in that time. Ooh. How are things going?
There was a lot of rough patches. Mm. A lot. I was, like I said, Mark's always been super chill. He's so happy to have Bria. It's crazy. Like he's done. He's good. But I desperately wanted another child.
Mm.
Because we talked originally, like back when we were dating, and I said, I want like 5 or 6.
How many siblings do you have?
I have 1.
Okay.
Yeah. and we're not terribly close, but I really wanted a big family.
Okay.
Like, especially because we knew we wanted to homeschool, and we really wanted to, like, raise our kids for Jesus, and we just wanted, we wanted the brood, right?
Yep.
Didn't happen. And so I was incredibly, incredibly bitter, and especially towards Mark, because I feel like he didn't get it. And it took a long time for me to come out of that, because it was pretty hard. He's so chill. Like, he's crazy amounts of mellow all the time. We joke that I'm the spice and he's the mellow. And for him, it just, it didn't hit him as hard as it did me. And because there is, there's the old saying, like, right, like a woman becomes a mom when she sees those two lines, and a man becomes a dad when he holds his baby in his arms. Right. So I don't think it was really real for him.
I know, for Cindy and I, generally the path to fertility and family has been pretty, pretty straight line for us. But, in between our third and fourth, Cindy, had a miscarriage. We weren't even really conscious that much that she was pregnant, but she found out, and then fairly short after, learned that she had lost the baby. And I know that it hit her really big emotionally. But for me, it was an idea rather than a person. And I struggled to, I wanted to be supportive. I think looking back, I don't think I made any like gigantic gaffes or terribly insensitive remarks, but she could see that it wasn't riding in a really deep emotional place for me. And I kept trying to explain to her, look, I'm sorry. And I'm sad for you. I can see that this is terribly painful, but I just can't seem to be with you in that same place, because it was just a thought that in some months from now, there'll be a person.
Yeah. And it's not an actual like tangible concept, right? Like, it's still out there in the ether.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So what do you say? What would you say to guys that are trying to be a support, or maybe they're clueless on how to be a support, when they don't have this same emotional connection with this little person?
Yeah. And not just emotional connection, but hormones.
Okay.
Because as soon as we get pregnant, our hormones just spike and they keep going up. Right. So not only are we dealing with the emotional anguish of it, but we're dealing with the physical anguish of it. And not to mention that pregnancy loss can be very, very physically painful too. Like, it's like a little labor. It's pretty bad.
So what should guys do? Help us do better.
Offer lots of chocolate. be there. Just be there and be willing for us to go through the exact same conversation that we've had with you 8 million times, and just wrap your arms around us and tell us it's going to be okay. Right. And that you're sorry, and that, yeah, you missed them too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, in general, you can live with the fact, if you see we're doing our best to try to be sympathetic.
Yeah. We're not always going to be peaches and cream. I'm sorry. But yeah. It's a lot of times it's a bitter feeling. Right. Because especially as a female, and especially as a female who's a believer, the Bible is just tons and tons and tons of fecundity, right? Everybody's popping out babies. And so you assume that it's going to be an easy thing, but it's not. And so I think especially because guys are supposed to be more stoic about the whole thing anyway, right? Whereas women were given a little bit more pass to be emotional and to kind of wear our hearts on our sleeves with this. It would be really nice for me, I know, especially if Mark would have like made more of an effort to mark the memories, right? Like, to remember the losses and whatnot. Because to this day, I still know the exact ages all my kids would be.
I see.
Whereas he doesn't, right? Like, it's kind of passed by. And it took me a very long time to just realize, okay, no, he's a male. This is how he's processing it. And especially because he is so chill, of course, he's not going to be up in arms about this. The same way that I am, right? And he didn't have that massive drive to have another child, whereas I did. So I felt very lonely in our marriage for quite a while there. And I felt like I was the one pushing and whatnot. And it's only been 2 years since we officially stopped trying.
So maybe back up for a second then. So you have Bria and trying again, and that's not happening. and you guys are trying to cope with repeated loss here. Mm-hmm. At what point were one of you saying, okay, that's enough? Or what about the return to fertility clinic? How did this just keep? Is it still going? What changed?
Basically, I had to get on board.
With Mark?
With Mark, yeah.
Okay.
Jesus was really working on me. Hmm. Like, yeah. It was a pretty intensive time because I was desperate for another child still. But at this point, I was fainting already and I was sick. And we've had a lot of health issues with me and whatnot. And it's been a lot. And so I remember Mark saying one day, he's like, is it going to be worth it if you get pregnant and we lose you and Bria doesn't have a mom? Or can you just be happy with what we've been given? Hmm. And that just shook me to my core. I'm like, I have to be happy with what I've been given. I don't have any other choice. Like, what am I going to do? Rail against God for the rest of my life? Like, no. And so it was a long process of coming to a point where I was okay with it. Hmm. God and I had to do some serious talking.
So how did you talk? Just casually? Did you go like on a retreat and write a bunch of things? Or how do you come to peace with God and what he's given you in terms of your family?
A lot of writing and a lot of reading.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm a stress writer by nature. So like I do all my best writing at 3 o'clock in the morning when I can't sleep.
Okay.
And yeah, I actually started writing for Still Standing Magazine, which is an online baby loss, miscarriage, and fertility support magazine, which saved my bacon in the middle of the night.
So when you were still working through infertility issues?
When I was still working through infertility issues, yeah.
And who are they?
It's just a group of women. I think there's a couple men too who write about their issues and write knowing that somebody else is reading this in the middle of the night. And we've been there and we've dealt with it and you're not alone. But writing has always been a huge thing for me. And it really took writing a lot of articles to make my peace with it.
So how many years were you, tell me about the process of applying for that. Because I know just not anybody can write for, what's it called? Still Standing?
Still Standing Magazine. It was actually pretty cool. So I've never been quiet about our losses or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I've always been following Still Standing. And they actually put out a call for new writers. And so a lot of people sent in like their writing that they had done. And I had done a couple things and gotten published before. But they read my stuff and they're like, yeah, we'd love to take you on. And so I wrote for them for about a year and a half, and I haven't written since January, just because I feel like Jesus is like leading me away from it now to actually interact face to face with women, which is a whole other thing.
Okay.
But they literally, I will say that they literally helped save my life in the middle of the night.
Just by being able to express what was going on?
Yeah. And knowing that I'm not alone and I'm not crazy and that these feelings are totally normal and justifiable. And that grief doesn't always have to wear a smile.
Hmm. So we like to say as Christians, you know, and I certainly would preach that God is with you in the midst of these times. Maybe do you have an example of a time that it didn't really seem that he was there? And is there a time that you would go, yeah, this was a time that he really was?
Oh, completely. Yeah. The time where he wasn't there, I remember we were living in Tuscany still. And we actually had to move from Tuscany because I was too devastated to stay there anymore because everybody on our block was pregnant and they, the rotten, we call them the stroller brigade. A whole bunch of stroller moms would meet like for their daily walk around and whatnot. And they would meet right out front of my house.
I see.
And so I'm like, oh, I can't do this. And so, yeah, we were preparing for our child-free life and we were still in Tuscany. And I remember just being downstairs in our basement in the spare bedroom and just crying so loud that Mark heard me from two stories away.
Wow.
I was a mess. And I told him flat out, I'm like, if you want a family, we need to have a divorce because I'm not going to be able to give you it. And I can't do this. And you need to leave me now. And I just remember he wrapped his arms around me and said, I'm not leaving you to self-destruct.
Wow.
He's like, we're in this together. Like, and that was definitely like probably the lowest and most lonely time. And the time where I felt like Jesus was the farthest away. But I felt him so close, actually, ironically, since we've stopped trying, since I got on board.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is huge because for me, yeah, I want things my way. I'm so type A about some stuff. It's ridiculous. I need my list for my list. And yeah, it's ridiculous. But I really have felt him just a constant presence. just with me, and especially just the peace that has come from our decision.
Okay.
To stop trying, and that it's okay to stop trying, and that we don't have to have all of these interventions.
Hmm.
And for some people, yeah, no, keep trying, keep going. You want to hear that you can still keep trying. But for a lot of people, you just need somebody to say, have you thought about not? It's okay not to. Yeah. And yeah, Jesus really was a massive catalyst in my decision to stop trying.
And so it was more not necessarily a one experience, but when you wrestled with the decision to stop.
Oh yeah.
There was the something tangible there that God was with you.
Cause I'm not naturally a peaceful person. I usually am like running fairly high and just the deep seated peace, like, yeah, okay, this is where we're at, and being able to enjoy Bria more because there was a period there where we were trying that I was so worried about the next child that I wasn't enjoying the child I had.
Wow.
Which was devastating.
Hmm.
And I feel like I missed like a lot of stuff with her when she was little.
Hmm.
Because I was so worried about trying.
Maybe just give us, I know you've done lots of research on this. How common, like out of how many couples are struggling with this stuff?
More than you would think from what people are not talking about, right? The average in Canada is between 1 in 5 and 1 in 6 couples is experiencing infertility.
Okay.
And so infertility is defined as a year without protection trying if you're under 35 and 6 months if you're over 35.
Okay.
So that's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
And what about on the miscarriage side? How common are miscarriages?
Crazy common. It's 1 in 4 is what they're thinking. They're actually considering moving that stat now to 1 in 3. Miscarriage is getting a lot more prevalent. But for a lot of women, they don't even know they're pregnant.
And they lose it, but they don't know.
Yeah, okay. So it could be just like a late period or whatever. But especially with today's technology and our pregnancy tests that we can buy in bulk, most women do know when they are pregnant. Yeah, because you can tell usually fairly quickly with the signs and symptoms, right?
Maybe this is a bit of a philosophical or a theological question. You know, you talked about the Bible stories. They couldn't get pregnant, and they really wanted to. And basically, it took a miracle to happen. Where today we can know, okay, it's not easy for us to get pregnant, but there's technology.
Yeah.
There's a lot of layers of technology.
We haven't even got
into that. So how, when a couple is seeking to wrestle with, okay, do we go with the technology? Do we spend the money? Do we take the next step? And this is, you know, it sounds cold for me to say this, but at what point, how do you know, or what is the way a couple could figure out, where do we accept this as, you know what, this is something that needs to just be embraced and we're going to accept that, or we need to press on? Is there a paradigm or something that helps a couple make that decision?
There's a huge amount of prayer involved. You've got to be like talking to Jesus at all times through that, because there's not one line that's going to be the same for everybody. Every couple is going to have to make their decision based upon what they feel Jesus is leading them through. For us, it was not IUI and IVF. For other people, they might have done like 8 or 9 cycles of IUI and IVF, and they're still feeling led to keep going. So, yeah, they really they have to be in constant communication with each other and with Jesus, because if they're not and they're just blindly stumbling around, it's never going to feel right.
Have you read any books or heard anyone talk about the ethics of infertility?
Oh, there's a lot. Yeah.
If you were to send someone who's beginning that journey, what would be your first recommendation on where to go on thinking about, you know, how far do we go?
Honestly, I would send them straight to the Bible. Truly, like that needs to be the basic one that they go back to.
So where would you send them in the Bible?
Hannah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Whenever anybody thinks of infertility in the Bible, it's always Hannah, Elizabeth, Rachel. Yeah. Go to the big three.
And what do you see in their stories that's of help and use?
Hope and putting all the cards down for Jesus. Right? Like laying the cards down for God to actually come in and do the work. Right? Because the whole reason why we didn't pursue IUI and IVF was because we felt that Jesus was just like holding us back from it, right? Like if this wasn't meant to be, it wasn't meant to be, and it's okay. Mm. But like, I always think of Hannah, where the priest thought that she was drunk because she was so devastated and just crying out to God. And I get that viscerally because I remember being that same person. And it's just, it's such a comfort knowing that we weren't forgotten.
Hmm.
Right? Like in the Bible, in people going through infertility, 2,000 years, 4,000 years later after this stuff was written, we're still dealing with the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's truly nothing new under the sun.
Hmm. Some people would say, but all those ladies got babies.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a baby.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm actually friends with like a lot of people who have gone through this as well. Cause I don't know, we all seemed magnetized toward each other. Yeah. And I remember that my dear friend, the church wanted her to speak on infertility and whatnot because she did get that final baby.
Okay.
And I felt really forgotten.
Hmm. Because you hadn't.
Because I hadn't. Mm. And because everybody wants the happy story of mm-hmm. Jesus showing up and here's your baby, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work like that. And so many people need to know that there's peace in the other side too.
There can be peace without a child.
There can be peace without a child. Mm. And it may not be immediate and it may not be any time you're expecting it, but eventually it will come.
Mm.
But the thing is you kind of have to settle into it.
Mm.
Right. Like it took me a long time, like I said, to get on board with Mark. And I didn't want to be the wife on the rooftop, right? Like the nagging wife. But it's very hard to go through.
Mm-hmm.
It's just devastating. Like, yeah. And like I said, especially in the church.
So talk to us a little bit about that, how we can do better. What are some key ways that we as, people who are in the church community can support women better, mm-hmm. Ask the right questions, any things that we shouldn't do. Speak especially to individuals who might be listening, not so much the pastor types like
yeah,
me
no,
who
for
kind
sure.
of are leading, but if we're just friends or we hear a story or something comes out, how do we be good friends?
There's so many ways. Listening is the biggest thing because for many of us, we feel like we can't talk about it. Because it's not something that is brought up in society, right? So having a friend who would listen and just be available to talk about it. Using your child's name, if you had a name picked out or whatever, especially with stillborn babies.
And you mentioned to me before in a conversation that all moms or the common stat is if you miscarried, there's usually a name picked out. Is that right?
I had a name from like that positive pregnancy test each time.
Mm.
Yeah.
And is that common for women in general?
I don't know. I know for a lot of my friends that I've talked to, yes. Everybody kind of has names that they associated with it. But it doesn't even have to be like a tangible name, right? Mm. It doesn't have to be like Mary Paul or whatever.
Mary Paul.
Yeah.
Good example.
One of my friends called hers Feather.
Huh.
Yeah. Or Pickle. Huh. Or anything like that, right? Uh-huh. Like just some way to use their name and make them real.
Because
mm-hmm. that's the thing, especially with early miscarriage, we don't feel a lot like the world thinks our babies were real. And that is really hard to deal with.
Hmm.
Yeah. Another thing is platitudes. Oh, people, please kill the platitudes.
Okay. Examples.
It's all in good time. Jesus knows what's best. God gives and God takes away, right? Like all of that kind of stuff. We don't want to hear platitudes. It sucks. Sorry.
So what do we say?
What do we say? I am so sorry you're going through this.
Okay.
Can I give you a hug?
Mm.
Do you need anything? Can I bring you a meal? Right? Like, do you need help with anything? Do you need to go and speak to someone? Can I help you find someone to speak to? Yeah. Anything like that.
Mm. You've talked to me about meals before. Mm-hmm. You say that's a big one.
That's a big one because especially for women who are going through like a horrific miscarriage where it is just, to be frank, a blood up one side and down the other, you can barely function and you're not really able to. You're not cognitively able to function. You're not emotionally able to function. It is just devastating. It is a death, right? So think about when you lose someone really, really close to you.
Mm.
Get the meal train going.
Okay.
Just make sure everybody's fed because, yeah, that's one thing that women shouldn't have to worry about is taking care of their family while they're in this position. Like, really, it's a time of, like, self-care and making sure that you're okay and getting the healthcare that you need surrounding it. But, yeah, anything tangible is a great way of helping a woman out. Like, delivering flowers, babysitting another kid while they go to a meeting with their doctors or whatever. Anything like that. Something tangible to say, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... that's those of us who might be supporting a woman or a family in that state. Talk to women directly who might experience a miscarriage in the future. It catches them off guard. What are a couple things to someone who's not gone through that experience before, or what would you say to that woman?
You are not alone. That is the biggest single thing that I can possibly say, is that you are absolutely not alone in this. Because in the middle of the night, you feel like it's the only you. And the stats tell us it's not, right? There's so many ways that you can get in contact with other people or just lurk on some forum or whatever, right? You don't have to deal with this by yourself. You are totally able to reach out, and you don't have to stay quiet. Because for a lot of women, they feel like they do need to keep quiet about this, and that it does shouldn't be, like you said, a speed bump, right? Like, it should just be, oh, totally fine. But no, it is. It's a life gone. It's horrible and devastating and tragic, and we're allowed to be wallowing in our grief over it, right? I would definitely say, too, don't go inward too hard, though.
Explain that.
Don't be me. Don't let the ball of bitter grow.
Okay.
Right? Reach out to other people. Talk to other people. No, talk to your pastor. Putting you on the spot. Sorry, Jason.
Okay. And there's many of us who tend to be male. That was an okay experience for you?
It was an okay experience for me. The pastor at our previous church that we had gone to, like, years ago when we first became Christians, they had gone through infertility for 15 years. And then they had their surprise baby. And so I just remember our pastor's wife saying, it's good both ways. It's good both ways. And I didn't get it then. And
like,
now
life
I
is good with, yes. and it was good too when we didn't have this person.
Totally. Yeah. And I wish I would have said to her, like, how much that meant to me to hear. But yeah, just talking, talk. But on the flip side too, you don't have to make this public. If you want to keep this a private situation, you totally can. There's tons of resources available online, especially now, that if you want to reach out and just be like
anonymous,
anonymous, you can totally do that.
So give us, and we'll put this on our site so people can access this directly.
Yeah,
but
I got a ton.
But if they wanted to, like, if there's, like, okay, out of the blue, there's a loss here, don't know where to turn. Where would you encourage someone to go right off the bat?
First to their doctor.
Okay.
Obviously, because they need to get, it's a physical thing. Like, they need to get their health care taken care of. They need to make sure that they're not having an infection. They need to kind of prepare if they need to do a DNC or if they need to do a preterm labor or anything like that, right? Like, it is a very physical thing. The emotional comes later. Then I would say, yeah, start reaching out. There's some great websites that you can go to. Pregnancy and Infant Loss Grief Support is a good one in Calgary. They meet at Foothills Hospital, I believe. I'll put that on. Healthy Parents, Healthy Children. So myhealthalberta.ca through 811. They have an extensive list, like one of the best lists I've seen of the steps with miscarriage and, like, what comes from it, what you need to think about, like, even up to handling baby's remains and whatnot, right? Okay. Like, it is very extensive. If you're dealing with baby loss, SIDS Calgary is a great one. For stillbirth, Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep, they are volunteer photographers who come and will actually, like, take photos of you and your baby in the hospital, so that you may not want to see those photos now, but you probably will at some point.
I see.
And for a lot of women, it's a lifeline so that they don't forget, right? Anybody dealing with infertility, fertilitymatters.ca is a great one. And it's very pertinent because it's Canadian information, which is nice, because there's a ton of American information out there, but it's nice to read some Canadian stuff. There's this one really good option on Livewire. It's memory boxes with stillbirth. And we'll put that one on too. And then I don't know if you know, but October 15th every year is still birth, baby loss, and miscarriage and infertility awareness day.
Okay.
And a lot of people do a lot of different things to remember their children. And so there's the Calgary Walk to Remember on September 14th, which is coming up. And it's at 1 p.m. and it's for anybody who's lost a baby.
I see.
Which is great. www.october15th.ca is walks and events surrounding miscarriage, infertility, and baby loss. So if even if you're not in Calgary and you're listening to this, you can go on there and find out anything that's going on in your area. Because sometimes it's nice to just participate with other people who've gone through
it. Who get it.
Right? Who get it. Yeah. And then, yeah, Still Standing Magazine is a great one.
Okay.
Just for reading if you feel like passing some time in the middle of the night.
So this has come full circle for you. And so you mentioned writing for Still Standing. That's been part of it. Now you sense that God is bugging you to get more directly in contact with other women that are navigating the same challenges. Tell us about that.
Well, the funny thing is I totally pushed against this. Like, Holy Spirit's been working on me for a while. We joke that I've been getting holy 2x4'd for a good long while about this, and I've just kind of been dragging my heels. And then you were actually talking about miscarriage or stillbirth up on the stage in February, and my husband's just like, come on, you gotta do something. And even like my friends afterwards, they're like, okay, time to step up. And I'm like, all right, Holy Spirit, this is all you. We'll see what happens. But yeah, I felt like I've done the children's ministry. I've written for Still Standing, obviously, but I really feel like there's so much more that you can do as a connection one-on-one. Like, when I say you're not alone, you truly aren't. Like, anybody going through this, hook up with me. I would love to go out for coffee.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we've talked about the potential of like a support group. I don't want to go into the details of the here and now because people listening may or may not be have access to that. But what do you imagine a group looking like? What might that do and how could it work?
Ooh, I would love to see a group of women meeting, like even if it's once a month or whatever, whenever we can, just to talk about it, right? Because it's not something that goes away. Like I met a woman who was 85 and she had lost twins when she was back when she was like 19 and she still remembers that day.
Wow.
Yeah. So like it runs the gamut. It's not just young women dealing with this. So I would love to see all ages come and talk about their experiences and just offer support to those who are going through it. And especially people who are pregnant, who are pregnant with rainbow babies. It would be so fantastic.
Rainbow babies.
Rainbow babies. So a rainbow baby is a baby who comes after a loss.
Okay.
So the rainbow after the storm.
Okay.
It's, yeah, some people hate the term, some people love it, but yeah. Having prayer when you're pregnant with your rainbow baby is a huge thing.
Okay.
And it can feel very calming to some women and just to know that you're not the only one on your knees at all times of the day praying that this one sticks.
Well, those of you who are liking what you're hearing from Jill and feel that you want to have a connection, I think we'll have some ways that the people could connect with you if they feel like talking.
We'll throw my email on there.
Okay. Anything else, Jill, that before we wind up our conversation here that we haven't touched on that you go, man, you'd like to put that out there?
Don't be afraid to talk about it. And you're allowed to. And even if you've never talked about it before in your life, there's always a first time for everything.
So even if it happened 20 years ago?
Oh, totally. Totally. Because for some women, it's still so fresh. Right? It never, like I said, it never really goes away. You learn to live with it, but it never really goes away. And that could be for a person dealing with one loss. That could be for a person who's dealt with infertility for 15 years and everybody thinks just doesn't want a child, right? Like, you're allowed to talk about it.
And when you're thinking about allies who might be the right place to start the conversation, I suppose that's an individual, like there's no
for
one
sure.
answer, but
no.
Where would you say these are some people to think through first? Or I guess the question is, should you go to someone you know, or do some people prefer to start with someone that's kind of fresh out of the blue, or it's all individualized?
It goes both ways. It's totally individualized. For me, I wanted somebody who had been through there, but I wanted to be a lurker, right? I didn't want to get in contact with anybody sitting across from the table because I was scared, honestly, that I would burst into tears. And you still do, right? It's been how many years since my last miscarriage, and I still cry about it. Hmm. But, and for a lot of women too, they are going to want to go to their best friends first.
Okay.
But if your best friend has never dealt with it, they just don't get it. And that's not to disparage anybody in our lives who hasn't gone through it and is willing to offer support. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. But you do need to talk to somebody who's been here, because it is a certain amount of pain, right? Like, it's a certain kind of pain. When your own babies are dead, it's a very, very hard thing to deal with. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, Jill, your way of no one gets to see you sitting across like I do right now, but you have lots of joy despite the fact that the journey's been a difficult one.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of joy that you get from, well, even some of the people that you've connected with that are walking through this in our neighborhood here.
Huge. So, and there is so much joy. You're right. Like, life is good. Life is good. Because this has happened to me, yes, I've had horrible experiences in the past, but it doesn't determine my future. Jesus determines that, and he's made it good.
Cool. Well, thanks for being so honest and open and putting this out there on the interweb.
Woohoo!
And we'll be praying and looking forward to seeing how God uses it for good in other people's lives.
Yeah, I hope he does.
Thanks for sitting down with us today.
Anytime. Thanks, Jason.
Anyone who's listening and wanting to know a little bit more about what Jill's talking about, she's talked about a number of resources here. I see a big list of that she's got written down in a piece of paper. Please visit us at CochraneAlliance.com/real. And we'll have that information posted and some links and some resources that you can find if you're looking for more information or help. Mm-hmm. And I know Jill herself has a desire to be available, so there could be some ways that you could connect with her as well. Okay, thanks again.
Thanks for listening to The Real Podcast. For more information on this episode and others, check out our website at CochraneAlliance.com/real. Until next time, keep it real.